Okay, good morning. This morning is the last lecture I will be giving you, and so I'm going to cover our last topic, which is Bluetooth, which is sort of yet another example of a wireless network sort of designed for a slightly different purpose than the ones we've seen before. I will say I posted a set of review notes. I'll say a few words about those. I won't go into any great detail. The detail is all in the lecture notes. And then at 12 o'clock, Martin Kennedy will be in the master's lab if you have any questions about your assignment. Next week, Martin Kennedy will be in the master's lab the whole lecture period, so 10 to 1. So again, that should be sort of a prime opportunity to sort of talk to him. And in the final week, we will have a guest lecturer talking about ad hoc networking. This won't be examinable, but you know, please do show him the courtesy of showing up and listening. It's quite an interesting topic. Okay, so moving on to our material. The topic of the week is Bluetooth, which is basically it's an industry standard for connecting devices at short range for fairly specific purposes. Okay, it has some intersection with the 802.15 standard. At some point, they sort of were parallel to each other, and then essentially Bluetooth has moved on. 802.15 is sort of not. So the primary reference for this is Chapter 15 of William Stallings. And if you're interested, there's quite a few tutorials. The Palo Wireless on the web, the Palo Wireless tutorial is quite nice. Okay, so what does Bluetooth do? Well, again, it provides short-range wireless capabilities, and so it's and it uses that unlicensed spectrum. Okay, so devices within 10 meters, so the size of a big room, can share up to 720 kilobits per second of capacity. And yeah, a lot of the devices you would own these days, a lot of laptops, cell phones, etc., would have some Bluetooth capability. And typically, like on this laptop, you know, if you turn it on, it searches for other Bluetooth devices in its range and informs you and lets you know if you want to connect. And so the purpose of Bluetooth was it's to support sort of an open-ended list of applications, again, specific to sort of, again, the device manufacturer and what they care to provide. The broad categories that are touted are cable replacements, so just get rid of it. It's a way to get rid of wires within a short range, so you don't have to plug in. And then voice transfer, so a way of providing, again, short distance voice connectivity. The standard arose from Ericsson in industry, and it was later standardized as 802.15.1, and again, the Bluetooth and the standard have then again diverged. Okay, Bluetooth specifically is developed and licensed by the Bluetooth Special Interest Group, and that's the website for that group. So, again, as a broad categorization, there's a lot of application areas. We have it can be used as a data and voice access point. So it can connect a portable and a stationary device, or even two portable devices. It can be used as cable replacement to eliminate the need for physical wires. And it can also be used in an ad hoc networking capacity to connect a group of devices together in sort of more of a peer-to-peer relationship. Okay. So what's a little bit different between Bluetooth and the other standards is, well, essentially the other standards provide a one-size-fits-all solution for connectivity, and then you add on your applications on top of whatever sort of connectivity or data transport they provide for you. With Bluetooth, you have, again, a wide number of applications, and the protocols are sort of have to be tailored to the type of application. So you'll have quite a few protocols specified, and then depending on exactly what your application is, you tailor the protocol, the exact protocols you use to that application. Okay, so this is just possible usage scenarios. The first one is 3-in-1 phone, and so you have a single device, maybe your mobile phone, and it can, using Bluetooth applications built on top of Bluetooth, provide different functionality. If you're in the office, it can act as an intercom, so you can talk sort of to people within the office without telephone charges. At home, it can act as a cordless phone, so connecting to your landline as opposed to, you know, connecting to the cellular networks. And then when you're on the move, you can have your standard mobile phone connectivity. It can act as an internet bridge, so allowing a portable device again to connect with something that has access to the internet. You can do interactive conferencing, so if you're sitting around a table, if your devices are linked up, you can do file transfer, not going out to the internet, but directly between the devices, hands-free and for your mobile television or indeed your computer, briefcase email. So again, you have a small device and that can connect to a laptop. You don't have to actually pull the laptop out. Synchronization between various devices. Or, again, just as a cordless desktop, so just removing the cables. So, again, all of these fall vaguely into the categories of sort of removing wires and data transport. Now, Bluetooth standards documents sort of break down into two categories. You have your core specifications, and again, this is the basic protocol set and the architecture of that set that will allow all of these different applications to run smoothly. And then you have profile specifications. And so this specifies essentially what subset of the core architecture are you going to use, and so what parameters, et cetera, need to be set. And all aspects of the core architecture specified then as mandatory, optional, or not applicable. Okay. So this is the basic architecture. Again, it's a layered architecture. And you start with a radio link, and then you go through to your logical provides or point-to-point connectivity. And, excuse me, the components of the architecture are subdivided into, again, five different categories. There's the core protocols, which are these here. And so the radio specifies essentially the parameters of the air interface. The baseband is to do with connection establishment. Link management deals with authentication and security in the form of encryption. The logical link control and adaptation protocol provides again, point-to-point link connectivity, and offers a connectionless and a connection-oriented service to the higher layers. So essentially what that means is it can act like a telephone network and provide you connectivity, or it can act like a data network and provide you a connectionless service. And the final sort of high layer protocol is the service discovery protocol, and that's has to do with trying to find devices in your vicinity and find out sort of what services they can provide and how you can interact with them. So that's the core Bluetooth protocol. Again, it provides you with this point-to-point connectivity and then sort of a service description. And then we have two protocols that are sort of more specific to different applications. There's the cable replacement protocols and the telephone control protocols. And so the cable replacement protocol provides a virtual serial port. And so again, just provides you a way of removing cables and sort of forwarding on data without cables. And the telephone control protocols allow for call control signaling and mobility management. And so the TCS bin allows for call control. The AT commands allow the allow the protocol allow for functioning sort of like a modem, okay, and then also so those are again sort of specific to Bluetooth, but allowing you to interact with other protocols, and then Bluetooth adopts protocols from other standards as well. So you have the TCP, you have your serial modem connection can go into the TCP IP stack, or it can use the object exchange protocol, which will, it works sort of like HTTP, so it allows you to transfer binary objects. Okay. So applications then can be built on top of this protocol stack. And pretty much what these sort of higher layers do is, again, provide you with different sorts of connections. And so depending on what your application is, you will want to essentially go through one path of the stack or another path of the stack. And so choose some subset of the stack. Okay, so the next two slides, again, just go through what I've just said, which is what the different functionality of the components of the architecture are. And so beyond the basic architecture, you have your usage models. And again, the usage models are specify the components of the protocol that will come into play with any given application. So we have a number of examples here. Our first example is file transfer. So we always need to use the service discovery protocol, again, just to try, you have to, two devices have to have the same services available to them to interact. And you always need to use the lower layers, the link management protocol, the baseband and the Bluetooth layer, because again, that's just, that's your basic data transport. So within that, then, you will choose various combinations of the sort of intermediate stack. So if you want to transfer a file, essentially that's an object exchange. So you have your protocol that makes it act look like a modem, and then you use the object exchange protocol to transfer the data. On the other hand, let's see. If you want to make a voice connection, again, you use the service discovery protocol to ensure that you can, and then you resort to the voice connectivity protocols. Okay. If you want to sort of act like a modem for delivering, sort of getting internet access, again, you will just have your serial port, and then use some protocol like TPP to connect to your modem. So again, the main point here is just that you select different combinations to facilitate different applications. Okay. And so those are the list of the applications that we saw in the previous slide. Now, so how do Bluetooth devices connect up to each other? And the connection is in the form of a master-slave relationship. And you can have, you need a single master, and that master can have between 1 and 7 slave devices. Okay, now that's 1 and 7 active devices. You can have a good deal more devices as long as they're not active. Okay. The master is going to control the communication, so it's going to control the various aspects of communication. So it's going to determine the channel, specifically spread spectrum is used, a frequency hopping mechanism is used, and it will determine that sequence. And it will control the synchronization within the network. Okay. Slaves then do not communicate with each other, but all communication has to happen through the master, and only when the master grants permission. Okay, so the master acts as an access point. So within that basic connectivity then, you can build up what are called scatter nets, which allow the connection of more than one piconet. And so essentially the master of one piconet can be then a slave in another piconet. And so you can get these larger communication areas. Okay, so just to see how this differs, we've already seen our conventional cellular system, and this system controls communication through the base stations, and these base stations are fixed. An ad hoc system typically arranges the various units as peers, and so there's no sort of master or slave relationship. They're all sort of on an equal footing, and typically they belong to one grouping and not multiple groupings. With scatter nets, then, you've got a couple of things going on. You've got the master-slave relationship, and you also have the idea that you can belong to more than one grouping. Okay. So, in terms of sort of the low-level details, Bluetooth uses Gaussian frequency shift key modulation, and there are three classes of Bluetooth transmitters which have different maximum power outputs possible, and obviously the higher your maximum power, the greater your range. But with the higher power classification, power control is mandatory. So just because they can transmit at that power, they will seek to transmit at the lowest power possible. Okay. And so in class 1, the power control is mandatory. In class 2, it's optional. And in class 3, there is no power control, but note that your range is only a meter anyway. So if you dropped it down below that, there wouldn't be too many uses that you could reasonably imagine. Okay, so Bluetooth, so all of that is specified in the radio layer. Then the baseband specification specifies the frequency hopping and manages the connectivity of the system. Okay. And so again, we get this idea of logical channels where sort of different streams of data are being transmitted. They're transmitted through a sequence of frequency hops. And you can have, again, sharing of the spectrum as long as your hop sequences are orthogonal or near orthogonal. And again, why? For the reasons you always use spread spectrum to provide resistance to interference and multipath effects. So, the bandwidth is divided up into 1 megahertz channels, and there are typically 79 of these 1 megahertz channels. And so each PicoNet has its own hopping sequence. Okay. And essentially what that means is that within the PicoNet, only one device can be transmitting at any given time. What device is transmitting is controlled by the master. And again, if you have multiple PicoNets operating, they should choose different hop sequences, and typically these are near orthogonal but not totally orthogonal, so it is possible to have collisions, and coding and ARQ are used to compensate for any collisions that occur. So the between the master and the slave, there's a time division duplexing going on, in which Data alternates between one direction and the other. So it goes from master to slave and then alternates back to from slave to master. So essentially, we'll move on. It's slightly more complicated than that. So we have our basic sort of hop size of 625 microseconds. And so you're alternating again between one direction of communication and the other. But packets are allowed to be of length either 1, 3, or 5 time slots. Okay. And obviously there's less overhead if you have a 5 time slot packet, so that it can be used for efficiency purposes. Okay. And so the alternation between uplink and downlink still goes on, but now for however long you're transmitting a packet, whether it's 1, 3, or 5 time slots, you use the same frequency. Okay. And then you pick up in your frequency system after the in your frequency sequence after the packet has been transmitted. So, typically two different sorts of links can be established between the master and the slave. You can have a synchronous connection-oriented link. And this is going to do exactly what it says. It's going to allocate a connection between master and slave. And your basic unit of reservation is going to be two consecutive slots, the uplink and downlink. And packets using this connection are never transmitted. So you get a periodic allocation, so you get essentially a guaranteed delivery rate, but not guaranteed delivery. And again, this is exactly what you need for voice. If a packet's sort of in error, then there's no use in retransmitting it. But you do need sort of regular transmission. The second option is asynchronous connectionless links, and that's your data link. And it provides a point to multipoint link between a master and all slaves. It makes use of the slots that are not reserved for our synchronous connections and allows for retransmission of packets that are received in error. Okay, a number of error correction schemes are used. The first of these is 1:3 rate forward error correction. And so, again, with our coding, that means for every bit of data, 3 bits are transmitted. And the correction scheme is that you send 3 copies of each bit. And you use majority rules, so you do try and correct the data. And so this is used for the packet headers and for voice data. So again, there would be an attempt, if you have a voice packet, there's an attempt to correct it, and if that doesn't work, it's just discarded. Your second option is 2-3 rate forward error correction. And this, for every 2 bits of data you send, you have a third, or for every 2 bits of data, you have 3 bits sent, so an additional redundancy bit. This uses a Hamming code, and as you recall from your your networks module, if you use a Hamming code, you can correct single errors and detect multiple errors. Okay. And so this is used again in other voice packet categories and in some control packets. And finally, for the remainder, ARQ is used, so automatic repeat, request. So if it's detected that a packet is in error, then the packet is resent. And this is used primarily with data packets. Okay, so the ARQ scheme used is your standard ARQ scheme. So if an error is detected, you discard the packet. You have a positive or a negative acknowledgement, and so you get retransmission either after a negative acknowledgement or after a timeout if you don't get an acknowledgement at all. Bluetooth uses what's called fast ARQ, and this makes use of the time division duplexing. And so if a packet is received in error in one direction, then you can use the return direction, which has the time slot immediately after, to send your negative acknowledgement. Okay. And so it's fast because it's sort of essentially your NAC goes in on the return time slot. If a negative acknowledgement is sent, then the packet will retransmit immediately. Okay, so typically you might think your time you would be moving on to another packet, but if the negative acknowledgement is received, you retransmit the packet in error immediately. Okay. So, that provides you with sort of basic point-to-point data transport. The data transmitted is, again, it's denoted through now logical channels, and a logical channel comes in the form of, again, one of these physical time slots, plus now the type of packet. And I didn't really go into the type of packet, but it's possible to send various different sorts of packets. Okay. And so these logical channels, again, perform, have different functionality and are transmitted, as we discussed just previously, in different ways with different coding schemes, okay, and different packet structures. So we have link control, and this deals with things like ARQ, flow control, sort of payload specification, and that's contained in the header of all packets. We have link management, and so this supports the link management protocol traffic, which again is concerned with setup, authentication, and configuration. So again, verifying that a user has the right to join a certain group. And that can be carried over any link. You have user asynchronous data. So that's your data, basic data transport port, and that would be sent over these connectionless data links. Then you have user isochronous, which is used for periodic user data. It's typically, again, sent over these connectionless links, but again, then would provide the, but it's with a periodic allocation and providing the ability to retransmit. And finally, user synchronous data, and so this would be your typically your voice data, and that's going to be carried over one of these connection-oriented links. So the PicoNet overall has a connection establishment and maintenance phase, and the main states for that are either standby or connection. And then there are a number of intermediate states which can be used to add new slaves. Okay. So if we look at our states here, we have a page procedure, which is used by the master to find slaves and perform the connection. The slave, of course, has a corresponding page scan state, so it's in a listening state, waiting to see if it receives a page. And so that would be used by the master to make a connection. Slaves can also make a connection via the inquiry state, so they will send an inquiry. These are listened for, and if a master hears an inquiry, it responds, and then the slave will go into the page state. Okay. So, looking at the inquiry procedure in a little more detail, the master identifies the devices that wish to participate in a PicoNet, and it transmits an ID packet over a number of carriers to which the slave would be listening, and the master stays in the inquiry stage until it's satisfied that it's contacted all of the radios. Okay. So the devices move between standby and inquiry scan, and then they enter a response. If they receive an inquiry, they enter a response state, and they receive the POP codes and the information they need for communication and move to a page scan state. Okay. So in the page procedure, the master uses the device's address to calculate a page frequency hopping sequence, and then communicates with the device and gives an ID. It sends an ID packet with device access code. The slave responds with a device access code ID packet with the same control message. And so then the master responds to that, the slave confirms, so you have essentially a handshaking procedure, and then the connection is established. Okay. And the master stays in the page state until all connections are established. Okay. Now, once the slave is connected, it can be in a number of modes. It can be active, so it's participating in the PicoNet, so it listens, it transmits, and it receives packets. It can be in sniff mode, and it will only listen to specific slots, so for control information. In the hold mode, it won't deal with ACL packets. It reduces its power, but it may still participate in SCO exchanges, so in voice connections. And in park mode, it's not participating in the PicoNet in any way. It's not sending or receiving packets, but it's still connected. So if it changes mode, if it wakes up, then it doesn't have to reconnect. Okay. And so audio connections then are supported, while voice connections are supported either by pulse code modulation or continuous various slope delta modulation. So again, that would impact on the data rate at which data was transported. The choice of which scheme is used is made by the link manager, and you pick whatever's most appropriate for the application. Okay, so I'm going to do something really annoying and go back quite a few slides to our stack.
again, what we have there is we've got the radio and baseband connections, and they allow, again, for the basic setup of these PicoNets, and also a specification of the basic parameters by which the data is transmitted, the encoding schemes, the modulation schemes, etc. Then on top of that is the link management protocol, which is going to, again, be responsible. So these sort of implement this, and then the link management protocol is responsible for setting up the connection. Okay. And so it handles encryption and authentication information. So manages security and also the basic right of access, and manages the clock synchronization, and manages the state of the various devices. So again, we have these devices in various states of connectivity, either active or parked, and the link management protocol is responsible for managing all of that. So link management protocol messages are exchanged as protocol data units. And again, there are quite a few uses for these. There's just general response information, there's security services, there's the time synchronization, and also communicating the station capabilities. So what version of the link management protocol is being used and what features are supported. And again, mode control, so the devices can be set into different modes, and what mode they're in is communicated. And that's essentially it. So it manages all of the connectivity. Okay. So that's the basic lower layers. And then we have our logical link control and adaptation protocol. And this provides basically an interface between the lower layer protocols and the sort of higher layer, sort of specific services that are going to be requested. So it relies on the baseband layer for error control. It makes use of the ACL links, but not the SVO links. And it provides two alternative services to the upper layers. It provides either a connectionless service or a connection-oriented service. So either reliable datagram services or a mode where flow control, flow and error control are provided. Okay, and so again, the channels, the data transport is divided to provide that. So you've got a connectionless channel, a connection-oriented channel, and then you have a signaling channel to allow for the control of all of this. Okay. And so the connectionless is used for the broadcast from the master to slaves. the connection-oriented is used sort of to provide a connection just between a single master and slave, and allows for quality of service specifications. So essentially, resource allocation in either direction. The signaling, again, is used to set up these types of connections, and so either establish it or you reject it. And then you, if a request is made, you establish or reject, and if you're going to establish, then you configure your connection. Okay, when you're done, you would disconnect. Echo is to sort of connect remotely to, and the information commands would be to get sort of specific information from remote entities. Okay, so what sort of quality of service is provided? And what can be specified is if it uses a token bucket scheme, which we won't get into, so don't worry overly much. If you took 3, 2, 4, you've seen the token bucket, but a token bucket can essentially be used to regulate the average rate at which data is transmitted and the peak rate at which data is transmitted. Okay. And so you can specify the average rate, the peak rate, latency, and delay variation, and negotiate those. Okay. So don't worry a huge amount about the details. You know, what we should take away from this again is that we have something, it's fairly complex going on. And the complexity arises from trying to sort of cater to different sorts of applications sort of individually. Basically, what most networks do is they say, well, you know, we provide a service, you adapt your application to the needs to the service that we provide. Bluetooth sort of does the reverse. It tries to adapt the service that's provided to the needs of the application. And so this makes it a bit more complicated in setting up the connections exactly. Okay, so one more slide on Bluetooth and we'll call it a day. And so, again, the IEEE 802.15 standard was based on Bluetooth, and the 2002 and 2005 standards are standardizations of the Bluetooth specification, but no, they've diverged, and the group no longer works with Bluetooth. So it's no longer a specification of Bluetooth. Work on the 802.15 standard has gone off into the area of wireless personal area networks,
So again, short distance wireless networking. Okay. And so there's a number of flavors of that. So 802.15.2 deals with the coexistence of these wireless personal area networks with other networks operating in the same unregulated band. 802.15.3 seeks to get higher data rates in over short ranges with low power, low cost, quality of service enabled, and simple connectivity and privacy. 802.15.4 gives a low power consumption, low data rates, low power consumption solution. And this has been sort of commercialized as Zigbee. 802.15.5 allows for networking of these, inter-networking of these wireless personal area networks. And 802.15.6 deals with body area networks, so low power devices which are operating on the body, so almost sensor network-like. Okay, so again, that's just as a point of interest. You can get details off the 802 website. Okay, so that's it for 802.15. And, more specifically for Bluetooth. And again, I present it as it's sort of moving to the other end of the spectrum from the sort of highly regulated telephony world to this almost free-for-all of trying to support lots of different applications and in a sort of fairly proprietorial way. Okay, so it looks like I'm still recording. That's good. Now, the final words I'll say have to do with the exam. And so there's not a lot to say about it. What's available? Well, you have the lecture notes. As of this afternoon, you'll have the full set of Camtasia recordings of the lecture notes. Each set of notes provided references. And while I would not sort of examine something that was not in my notes but touched on in the references are a good way of helping to understand what's in my notes. You were given two problem sets, and when I was looking at them, I realized that I'd actually posted the solutions to the second set as the problem set. But so you have solutions, I'll post the solutions to the first set as well. Okay. Attempt the problems before you look at the solutions. Again, because they're indicative of whether you understand what's going on or not. Okay. So if you're comfortable doing the problems and you understand the principles behind them, that's a good sign for the exam. If you just sort of try and memorize the solutions, well, that's not as good a sign. Okay, what else is available? I either have or will post a sample exam. This is indicative of formatting more than anything else. You need to choose, you'll have to choose 4 of 5 questions. The type, within the questions there's parts, and typically what can I ask? Well, I can ask you to derive some result. I can ask you to do a calculation, so as in the problem sets. Or I can ask you something about sort of your general knowledge and understanding of the material that we've presented here. Okay. You, in addition to the sample exam, at this point, the module's been, was ran last year, so you have a number of sample papers available on the registry website as well. Try not to overanalyze the exact content of the exam questions. There may be some patterns detectable, but you can't rely on that really. Okay, now I have given you topic areas for the various questions, both in the exam and hopefully not necessary in the repeat. So again, I would never advocate sort of strategic studying, because even if you, if you decide to sort of not study a topic, you may feel you're down to having to do the remainder of the questions. And you may find that, you know, for some reason something's trickier than you anticipated. So it's always best to study the whole material. Okay, and so I think that this is sort of repeating myself. So I can either ask you problems or I can ask you sort of general knowledge type questions. I try to ask my general knowledge questions. I tried asking if there are more basic principles than gory detail, but, you know, again, interpretations of which is which can vary. Okay. And hopefully I haven't sort of done overkill on the acronyms, although I know there are a lot because of the network angle and the telephony angle. Okay. So I'm really not going to go through the various topics, but this is, again, listing what I thought were the key points. You still need to know sort of all the detail behind them, obviously. And so you had the digital comms model. Then you had RF systems. And that fed into sort of a overview of cellular systems. Then we looked at sort of specific examples of cellular systems. So we started with GSM and sort of the voice connectivity. It's a good foundation to start with for cellular networks. And then we looked at 3G and 4G in almost an evolutionary manner. So yeah, GSM did things in a specific way. Then 3G and 4G changed that to meet the requirements of the various specifications. So specifically 2G was voice connectivity mainly. 3G moved to handling data on an equal footing, and again 4G moved to handling data with much higher data rates. Okay. And so within GSM, again, we had this idea of how things are basically done, what's the architecture, how are the radio links set up, and the channel structure was an important concept there. And then the layered architecture to provide your control. And then you moved on from that, again, to handling data much more efficiently. And again, we've looked at the architecture, the channel structure, the quality of service, and moving on to UMTS as the real 3G standard, and looking at the error interfaces it provided. Within 4G, we noted that there were some new key technologies, so orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, and using that for multiple access. And I won't ask you about the fast Fourier transform. I mentioned it, but you won't need to reproduce it or anything to do with it. And then the MIMO techniques through which we could either sort of improve capacity or improve the reception quality. And also use the sort of the capacity then can be shared among multiple users. And finally, within 4G, we said there were two competing standards, the LTE Advanced, which was the evolution of GSM on moving forward, and then the WiMAX Wireless MAN standard. And we looked at various aspects to do with those two ways of doing things. Then, sort of last time and this time, we've looked at sort of two examples of networks which are outside of this cellular network world. We looked at wireless local area networks last week, and then the Bluetooth networks this week. And so I don't really have anything else to say. At any point, feel free to send me email, ask me questions, or set up an appointment. I'm not available for the next 2 weeks, but following that, I'll be available. So good luck with your assignment and with the exam. And I will see you later.